Hello, San Pedro Podcast, episode 106.
Hey, I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jess.
And this is the Hello, San Pedro Podcast.
Join us as we talk with locals, community leaders, business owners,
and people like us who love all things San Pedro.
Every week, we'll explore San Pedro's deeply rooted culture,
discuss local issues, and spread good vibes.
Let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Hello San Pedro podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Silva. In continuing our series on environmental conservation, we have two amazing guests. They are local and they have so much to tell us about one of our very own nature preserves in our very own backyard. So we hope you enjoy this episode and we hope you enjoy learning more about our local ecosystem.
Hello, my name is Zoe Allen. And I'm the Education Program Manager for the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, which we'll learn later manages White Point Nature Preserve, and that's why we're all here today.
My name is Dave Pilon. I am on the Board of Directors for the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, and in that capacity, I serve as the Chair of the Development Committee. Okay. Which means I'm always asking people for money. That's my job, is to help bring in funds to support our mission and our cause.
Yeah. Really important you raise the funds so that we can run our education programs.
That's what they tell me, so.
Well, welcome, guys. Thank you so much for being here. We're really excited to have you guys. Amanda and I wanted to focus. She's not feeling well. She's sick a little, so she's taking a week break. But we wanted to focus on conservation, and our podcast is all about being here local in San Pedro. And so one place that stood out was the Land Conservancy, the White Point being a big one. I know that there's a few others that are part of the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, but we'll get into that in just a little bit. First, I kind of want to get to know you both on an individual level. So, Dave, do you want to start off in giving us a little bit of your history and sort of your upbringing? And how did you end up in San Pedro ultimately?
So the ending up in San Pedro is actually almost 30 years ago. It'll be 30 years exactly in January of 2024. Uh-huh. My wife, Ann, and I moved in January of 94. And I remember it very clearly because about 3 days before we were scheduled to move, we had the big earthquake up in North County of Los Angeles. So we were all packed up in boxes everywhere in our house in Hermosa Beach. And at about 5 o'clock in the morning, everything started to shake. But we probably had less damage than anybody because everything was packed into boxes. But I remember it well. But now Zoe will tell you as a native resident, I will have barely passed probation on January of next year because I will have been in San Pedro for 30 years. The native San Pedroids, as I like to call them, feel like that's just barely enough time to actually be considered a non-rookie.
Totally. I lived in New York for a little bit and it was like a 10-year there, but I think Pedro has it beat by saying that it's a little longer than that until you can call yourself Pedro.
Exactly. So actually, though, my upbringing, I was born in Inglewood and raised in Torrance, but my first experience with San Pedro was when I was probably 5 to 7 years old because my dad was a World War II veteran, and he was crazy about all things military, being a veteran of that era. And so he would love to throw us all in the car and drive down to San Pedro. And my first experience with White Point was probably when I was like 6 years old, when it was still a military base. We would drive around so we could see the Nike base and all that sort of thing. And he just loved driving around San Pedro. And we loved taking the ferry that was still around until probably around the mid to late 60s, I would think. So my first experience with San Pedro were very, fun and, family oriented back then. Ann and I picked San Pedro because it was so close to Long Beach, where I worked from 1989. Both Ann and I worked at Mental Health America of Los Angeles. We were part of the leadership team of a private nonprofit agency that serves people with severe mental illnesses who are often homeless or incarcerated, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so from 1989 till I retired in 2017, that was our role, is to provide services to, you know, people with severe mental illness. And so that's what we were, that's why we picked San Pedro, because it was such a, you know, close commute to Long Beach. I used to tell people I had the best commute in Los Angeles. It was basically 20 minutes across the bridges over to Long Beach. And that's why we originally settled on this area. Aside from the fact that it was, as I tell people, the best kept secret in Los Angeles, because it was so affordable compared mm-hmm. to other places. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And then for you, Zoe, you grew up here.
Yeah. So born and raised in San Pedro. Don't currently live in San Pedro anymore, but I do, you know, I commute here, I work here, and then my folks also still live here. So sometimes it feels like I do still live here.
I see your dad walking around sometimes.
Yeah. Everyone sees him walking around. But gosh, I mean, you know, I went to, you know, San Pedro High School, you know, San Pedro Pirate was in the Marine Science Magnet, which was super, you know, formative in my experiences early on. You know, my first job in college was actually at Portsicall Restaurant hostessing.
Oh my goodness.
R.I.P. Portsicall Restaurant. Wow. Missed that place.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then, you know, kind of like almost all of my other jobs before working for the Land Conservancy just happened to also be in San Pedro. Mm-hmm. I worked at the Cabrillo Marine Aquarium for a really long time. And then also worked for, you know, a smaller organization that took kids out on harbor tours, out on boats and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so almost all my time spent here.
Yeah, and so there was a magnet program at your school that was dedicated to the marine sciences?
Yeah, there still is.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The marine science magnet at San Pedro High School. Yeah.
Was it because of that that you grew an interest and knew that that was sort of the field or an area close to what you wanted to do?
Yeah,
you
know, my interest kind of started before I went into high school. My parents took me to the beach all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so close. How could they not? I spent so much time going to the tide pools and, you know, exploring all the little creatures that you can find in the rocks. And so I think that was probably where it all stemmed from. Yeah.
Nice. And then you're getting a master's degree,
yes.
right?
Yeah. So getting a master's degree at Cal State Long Beach in science education, with an emphasis on informal education, which is pretty much any type of learning that you could do outside of a classroom.
Oh,
so
nice.
Museums, aquariums, nature centers, outdoors.
Immersive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. That's awesome. Dave, you have a background in nonprofits, right? And specifically
psychology.
With psychology. Okay, so was that something that you knew you wanted to do?
So I went in the military after high school, mm-hmm. In 1970, and my military occupation was, I was a hospital laboratory technician, but my roommate happened to be a psychiatric technician, and it sounded like his job was a lot more interesting than my job was, and so I got interested in psychology at that time when I was sort of 18 to 21.
Okay.
And when I was discharged from the Army, I went back to Cal State Long Beach and got my bachelor's degree at Cal State Long Beach.
Oh, cool.
And then I thought I wanted to be an academic. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. So I went to graduate school and got my PhD in social psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 years of graduate school convinced me that I didn't want to be an academic. so I started looking around for other kinds of jobs that a psychologist could do, and I found a place where I was actually working with people with severe mental illness in what was called a clubhouse. And I just was so fascinated by the model, because it treats people as whole people, and even if they have a severe mental illness, you help them to find jobs, you help them to find meaningful roles in the community and that kind of thing. And so it was such a formative aspect of me. It's like everything I did from that time in mental health was to try to replicate that mm-hmm. throughout the community. And I think we did a pretty good job, actually, at our program in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of accolades for the services that we provided there. In fact, I'm in 2 weeks, I've been asked to come up to Sacramento to testify in front of the Mental Health Commission about how to improve the mental health services that are happening in California right now.
So, that's incredible. Yeah. You're actually not the first guest that we've had who's been a part of Mental Health of America. We had a couple of other guests. One in
Pedro residents? Yeah.
That are Pedro residents now, I want to say yes, whether they've always been or not, but they are now. Yeah. I believe it was Brandon who works now.
Absolutely.
You do know Brandon.
I do know Brandon.
He was one of our first guests. Oh, cool. He was great. We did a whole segment on that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. That's incredible work. I mean, that's, And then how, in all of your work, especially with you, Dave, how did you transition then going into the Peninsula Land Conservancy?
So I've always been invested and interested in, you know, helping preserve the environment kind of thing, but I've never sort of volunteered or done anything in that regard. It's one of those things. That's what when I said, you know, before we started the podcast today, I said, I'm still learning a lot, mm-hmm. a lot, Jess, about, mm-hmm. About this. And I get educated every day by people like Zoe and the other staff at the Conservancy. But I love White Point, and that's what drew me in. Mm-hmm. And, ever since it became the preserve about 23 years ago, when Los Angeles sort of made it into the preserve and started working with the Conservancy, I've been walking our dogs there, you know, all the time. I was kidding our city council member, Tim McCosker. He met with us at the Nature Center recently, and he was, you know, we were talking about the origins and that sort of thing. And I said, you know, when there was a big wire fence around here, I was one of the guys who was cutting holes in the fence to be able to walk our dogs here. And he said, you know, that's a federal offense. And I said, well, I think the statute of limitations has run out on that. But that was the, you know, original attraction. It was just such a, even before the Conservancy started doing all this, you could just see mm-hmm. the potential in that mm-hmm. in that place, and it would just so draw you in. And so we would, you know, naturally just be drawn to it.
I completely understand. We have two dogs ourselves, and we go there all, you know, as often as we can to go hiking and such. And it's a beautiful place. I would like to just roll back the dial on time real quick and go into the history of the place prior to it. Even I know that you mentioned it was at once a Nike missile base.
That's right.
And so going before then,
The history dates back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But first of all, the very first people that were at White Point, but also just all along the Palos Verdes Peninsula, were the Tongva Native Americans, Tongva Gabrielino people. And so they were really the first, you know, landowners of this area. And they were amazing stewards of the land, mm-hmm. you know, utilizing all of the, you know, the native plants and animals that grew here on the peninsula in sustainable ways so that they could have it for, you know, generations to come. But then, of course, we know that eventually the Spanish made their way to California, and we did have, you know, a lot of Spanish ranchers that utilized this whole area, not just San Pedro and White Point. But White Point was a site of ranching. There were, you know, it's hard to think about, but there were cattle, you know, mm-hmm. livestock. And with that, they brought all sorts of non-native plant species with them mm-hmm. as well. And then, you know, around a little bit before the World War II era, we had, you know, the Japanese-American farmers mm-hmm. that rented the land from the Sepulveda family. So there was actual, like, agriculture farming going on, you know, tomatoes, squash, all sorts of things that they would grow. And, of course, they would fish the waters mm-hmm. Down mm-hmm. below. And a lot of people probably know that San Pedro was a really big Japanese-American fishing community prior to World War II.
I read the sign at White Point. I remember that there's a sign there that kind of talked about it, and I found that so fascinating because mm-hmm. I would have never known otherwise, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of like interesting, informational signage over at White Point all about the history.
Yeah.
But it's kind of neat. Like during the same time period with the Japanese Americans, there was also, you know, across the street, there's Royal Palms Beach. Mm-hmm. That whole area down there was actually a sulfur hot springs resort. Owned by a Japanese family. And it was like a really big, you know, hot spot for people to come and enjoy the sulfur hot springs. You can even still kind of smell the sulfur if you go down there during low tide.
Really?
Yeah,
oh my
definitely
goodness.
Do that. Go down yeah. during low tide and you get like a kind of a whiff of rotten eggs.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the natural sulfur coming out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And there used to be a spot, like a resort
mm-hmm.
down there. Wow.
Yeah, I wish I had, you know, we have pictures of it over at our nature center,
mm-hmm.
But there's still some of the foundational, layout still down there.
Okay.
And if anyone's familiar with there's the big fountain that's up top in the parking lot.
Yeah.
That supposedly was down there in the hot springs.
Oh.
Yeah.
What an interesting history to have so many layers. I mean,
mm-hmm.
starting off with the original native population going forward into like the different segments. And then with the Japanese, I mean, I'm assuming this was prior to World War
yes.
II. And so.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, with the U.S. involvement in World War II, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Japanese Americans were unfortunately put into internment camps. And then the military occupied White Point
mm-hmm.
During World War II and during the Cold War as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or was that when it became a base at some point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A lot of people go to White Point and they want to learn about the military history of it.
Yeah.
We get a lot of questions about that. And so there's two very large gun emplacements up top on the main trail, the Vista Trail.
Yeah.
Really huge concrete structures that used to house very large guns that, you know, that would point out towards the ocean in case there were enemy warships coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, it's a neat point of interest for
yeah,
people.
Yeah, part of
there.
The coastal defense
yes.
at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And then at what point did it become like, how did it become the space that it is now?
Yeah, so I believe it was at the 1970s?
So
or
a little bit later.
Later.
Los Angeles, it was deeded to Los Angeles, to the city of Los
mm-hmm.
Angeles from the military. It's like people don't realize that when military bases close, they often give them to the local authority kind
okay.
of thing. And so in this case, it went to the city of Los Angeles.
Okay.
And so they took it over. And that was probably in the 1970s or thereabouts. But basically, it was left sort of unused and it filled up with a lot of junk and trash and all kinds of stuff.
Was that when it was fenced off?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But around the late 1990s, there was a lot of, you know, with development happening, there was a lot of pressure to, it's like, what are we going to do with this land? This
mm.
is like some of the last best land on the coast of LA County. You know, what can we do with it? And so there was actually a big community process about trying to figure out what was the best thing to do. And a lot of people wanted to use it for a soccer field. You know, the developers wanted to develop housing on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the community ultimately, you know, came across with the idea of let's preserve it as natural land
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. It's like, let's keep the open space because it's so hard to find open space
right.
anywhere in Los Angeles County anymore. And that was the consensus that everybody came to. And that was right around 2000 or so. And in 2001, I believe it was, the city of Los Angeles declared that it was going to be a park going forward and signed a 25-year agreement with the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy to manage it. So the Conservancy doesn't own the land. The city of Los Angeles does, but we have this agreement with them that's coming up, you know, for renewal, and we're actually in the process of negotiating with the city. It's like, what's that, you know, new agreement going to look like? Can
mm-hmm.
we make it? Can we make it stronger? Can we make it better?
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a couple of years to go. But it's over the last 25 years, you can't imagine what it was like, you know, back in 2000 and how it improved it's been since that time. You have pictures that you look at when it was all fenced off and just horrible. But it's just such a wonderful, it's our own local super bloom now.
Yeah,
I mean, if you go
really
there,
is.
You just see all the flowers and it's just a wonderful thing. And over that time, we've had, you know, resources provided us by the state of California, particularly the Wildlife Conservation Board, has given us grants. There was originally a $1 million grant from the Wildlife Conservation Board to start, you know, the planting and that sort of thing. But there's also tens of thousands of hours of volunteer time that San Pedro residents have given to make the place what it is today.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, I kind of want to give credence and some time to talk about the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, because, I mean, they're the ones that have been bestowed the responsibility of taking care of it. How, you know, what is their story?
So the conservancy was formed, I believe, back in 1988, if I'm not mistaken, by a man who lives in Palos Verdes Estates named Bill Ayler.
Okay.
And his original vision was, you know, we need to preserve land. It's like it's becoming overdeveloped. Now, that was 1988. So, you know, it's nothing like it is today. But so the conservancy has its mission is to save as much land as possible, to both preserve it and to restore it. And Zoe could talk much more about that in terms of like what restoring it means to, as she was saying earlier, to its native habitat because of all of the invasive species that have been brought in and those kinds of things. But our mission is to preserve the space, restore the land for education and enjoyment. That's that's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
The conservancy has expanded since back in 1988. I think we now manage or own approximately 1,700 acres across the peninsula, of which White Point is only about 100 acres. So you get
Wow.
you get a picture. It's only about 5 or 6% of the entire amount of property that the conservancy manages.
Yeah, and was White Point the first?
Nope.
Or were there other? Yeah.
No, there were others over in the very first one was in Palos Verdes Estates, and that's probably because, you know, Bill was a native there, and the vast majority of them are in Rancho Palos Verdes.
Okay.
RPV, but you know, White Point is our own, you know, stake in the system,
San Pedro.
Kind of thing. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very cool. And then, yeah, let's talk about the restoration of that habitat, because I mean, like Dave said, it really does look like a super bloom. Like it.
Absolutely.
We don't have to drive far.
We yeah.
can just literally go
we don't
there.
Have to go to the Antelope Valley.
No, we don't.
We really don't. No, it's gorgeous there right now. And, you know, the restoration that has been done there is really thanks to, you know, thousands of volunteer hours that have gone into it mm-hmm. over the years and still continue to
yeah.
go into it as well. But, you know, White Point is predominantly a coastal sage scrub habitat,
okay.
or at least that's the habitat that we've been trying to restore.
Okay.
You know, that's the native habitat, and, you know, coastal sage scrub is usually characterized by having more, you know, shrubby type, bushy
mm-hmm.
type plants, not
mm-hmm.
so much large trees.
Mm-hmm.
It generally doesn't get a whole ton of water. Usually gets its water from coastal fog, so hence the name coastal sage scrub.
Yeah.
But it is one of those habitats that has disappeared quite a lot all along California, not
mm-hmm.
just the Palos Verdes Peninsula.
Mm.
But that was mainly what the Palos Verdes Peninsula was. You
is
know,
that what it
pre-
once looked like?
Yeah, a lot of it. Yeah. There are also some native grasslands as well that
mm-hmm.
used to... you know, beyond the peninsula as well. But a lot of it was coastal sage scrub habitat.
This may be a very silly question, but I'm curious, how do you, like, come to find out what its original habitat would look like? Like, how do you determine what
Ooh.
Species would be, like, you know, invasive and maybe had been planted by someone who came or...
I think there are a lot of records, and you know, we have a lot of people who are really stewards of the environment on our board and staff, you know, on our stewardship committee and that sort of thing. And you know, they have records from, you know, early settlers about
oh, wow.
you know what the land looked like
yeah.
and that sort of thing. I'm certainly not an expert. This is where I mean that I'm still learning a lot, Jess.
Yeah.
About that because
yeah.
you know sometimes you know people say to me things like. They'll say, "Oh, I just love the mustard in the," and I say, yeah, it's beautiful, but it's invasive kind of thing. And they say, oh, really? You know, it's like, yeah, I'm afraid so. And I get that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, but we are trying to restore it to its native state kind of thing. So,
yeah. So of those like invasive, some of these invasive species, like let's identify some of them. So mustard would be one.
Oh, mustard is one. Yes. Chrysanthemums.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Oh, wow.
Not things like the poppies are native and a lot of the desert daisies mm-hmm. that you see, the white and yellow desert daisies, those are native as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Also to add to that list, the fennel is a non-native species.
Oh.
Kind of cool though. It's the same fennel that you can get at the grocery store.
So yeah.
It's an edible plant, but it's a non-native invasive species. The castor plant as well.
Okay.
Non-native invasive, but also highly poisonous.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's really interesting. That's where the poison ricin came from, is the castor bean.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's see. Any of the ice plants that usually line
that
highways?
Ivy. Yes.
Yeah, those are a non-native invasive species, too.
That's so funny. As someone who isn't, you know, knowledgeable in any form about botanicals, but that growing up, that is so, mm-hmm. like, identifiable as like California, like I saw it all over Southern California.
Absolutely, yeah. And like the point of planting it here was to help with erosion, but it really doesn't help all that much because they have very shallow root systems, so it really doesn't hold the land back quite as much as native plants would because they tend to have more deep root systems.
I see.
Yeah.
What are some of the animals that are native here?
Oh yeah, great question. Yeah, so I think two of the main species that we really work towards, in restoring their habitat are a bird species called the California gnatcatcher. They are an endangered species. They're really cute, tiny little birds that kind of sound like a kitten meowing. In fact, if you are walking through White Point and you hear something that sounds like that, it's a California
gnatcatcher. It's not a kitten meowing. It's a California gnatcatcher.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good population there. So, you know, a success story for White Point restoration. But then also the Palos Verdes blue butterfly. It's, you know, endemic to the Palos Verdes Peninsula. It can't be found anywhere else. And you know, it's so rare that for a really long time, people thought it was actually extinct.
Oh, wow.
And it was sort of rediscovered, I believe, in 94, here in San Pedro. And yeah, now we're working really hard to restore their habitat. And I was actually lucky enough to see one the other day.
Did you?
Yeah,
wow.
It was really cool.
Wow.
Another fun success story, but you know, more work to be done, of course.
Yeah. And then what about some of the hawks that we see flying around?
Yeah, I feel like the majority of them are red-tail hawks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what we see a lot of. They're not an endangered species or anything. They're very plentiful, but you know, a really important part of the local environment, the ecosystem, the food chain, their main predator.
And they're great to watch.
Yeah.
They definitely help keep the rabbit and squirrel population, you know, at a good level, a good healthy level.
That's a good thing, especially the squirrels.
Yeah.
Did the drought impact like conserving the land or restoring it? Did that impact it at all, those efforts?
Absolutely. It was a tough 3 years. It was a tough 3 years with the drought.
Yeah.
And we're so grateful. That super bloom we're getting now is all a result of the rain that we've had. And we really haven't had a bloom like this since then. And I noticed that, you know, certain things, you'll find this funny perhaps, is that I remember before the drought is that we would have people walking through the preserve collecting snails to eat. And they would, you know, and they know what they're doing. They find all these snails and they take them home and they, you know, wash them out somehow or clean them out somehow. And you know, in the last 3 years with the drought, it was bad for the snails and nobody could do that anymore.
Kind of thing.
And so I understand that just recently that there have been some more snails out and people.
Oh, yes. The snails are back.
But people are out there collecting them and taking them home for meals.
Kind of
escargot. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, so are snails a good thing, or are they, it just comes with the territory?
I believe the main snail that people are collecting is the milk snail, and those are a non-native species.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Okay. So it's helpful.
Yeah, they can collect it. It's okay.
Take them as much as you can, yeah.
Do you ever have that where people come and they're like, oh, this is a pretty plant. We want to take a little clipping of this or clipping of that.
So I witnessed that the other day where a mother was educating her, I'm guessing, 5-year-old daughter, no, you can't pick the poppies kind of thing. It's which I really appreciate. It's like it's a tough lesson because the child wants to pick that beautiful flower, but you know, but that kind of education is what we're hoping from the public. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get into the Nature Center.
Yeah. So the White Point Nature Center opened in 2010. And it's actually a historic relic from the Cold War era. It's a pretty much a repurposed missile assembly building.
Oh.
You wouldn't really know it by looking at it, but that's what it used to be.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, we've decked it all out. We've got some, you know, cool exhibits in there. Kind of the main exhibit tree that's inside is a like a historical timeline of the peninsula and also of White Point, starting from, you know, the Pleistocene era, when we actually used to have things like woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and dire wolves that lived here on the peninsula. And then it kind of goes through, you know, the Spanish ranching days and the Japanese American farmers, and then finally to, you know, the Land Conservancy managing it and restoring the land.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what else is the Nature Center there? I mean, I know it's open on weekends, right?
Yeah. So we're actually open on Wednesday, Saturday, and Sundays.
Oh, okay.
From 10 to 3:30. Come check us out. But, you know, other things that we have inside the Nature Center, we have like a lot of, you know, hands-on things for kids to do, different hands-on exhibits. Lots of specimens, you know, like cool things like snake skins and, you know, feathers and, you know, cool insect specimens, you know, that we have for the kids to check out. We actually just set up a snail terrarium inside.
Yeah.
You know, so many people have questions about the snails. You know, what are these snails? Why are they here? So,
right. You
know, one of our awesome naturalists, Adina, actually just set up a fun little snail enclosure.
Oh, that's so
cool. People can learn about them.
Yeah.
And the education program that you do for the third grade, you know, kids, you know.
Yeah, that's probably the main bulk of my job is managing our student naturalist program, which is a program for our third graders all over the peninsula. So that includes, you know, San Pedro, all of the public schools in Palos Verdes, and then some of the surrounding cities. Like we have a school in Lomita and Redondo Beach.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, for some of the schools, they get bused over to White Point, and we do a really cool program with them. And then for some of the other schools, they're really lucky where they can just walk to either a nature preserve or, you know, some type of natural space within walking distance of their school. So, you know, they go to different spots. So it all kind of depends on what school they go to and what's available. But a lot of them, particularly the San Pedro schools, do come to White Point.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's specifically with third graders.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's part of, like, their program of, like, learning the ecology and the environment.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a pretty extensive program. They do 4 classroom sessions where we have, you know, either a staff or docent that comes and visits them. And they do lessons on, you know, natural history and birds, plants, insects, and then kind of their like final culminating thing is a field trip.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing for kids to be immersed and see it. It's, you know, I think it adds to education to be like tangible and have this other element than just conceptual learning. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's cool. And then what other programs and services does the White Point offer?
Like I said, we rely a lot on volunteers to do, you know, a lot of restoration efforts. And so we do things like outdoor volunteer days at White Point, but also at some of our other nature preserves as well. And outdoor volunteer days are, you know, pretty much open to anyone who wants to come and join. And you could be doing planting, watering, weeding, mulching, pretty much any type of painting. Yeah, anything that helps beautify the nature preserve. And we do those at White Point pretty much once a month. Okay. And in fact, we have a really big outdoor volunteer day happening on Earth Day on the 22nd.
Yeah.
So we usually get like over 100 people that show up to that one. And then we also have a really big one coming up in September for National Public Lands Day.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's kind of the main one. And then, you know, we also get scout groups that want to come and they kind of, you know, maybe like adopt, you know, a certain amount of land and they can help work on that piece together as a group. We also just get, you know, other organizations that want to, you know, adopt a plot of land and they can come out and work on it themselves.
The scouts are really helpful too, because they'll take a section, you know, you've walked the trails there. And so the trails, you know, they get worn away and that sort of thing. And they'll help come and, you know, take a section of trail and put in posts along it or help maintain it and those kinds of things. So it's really a nice volunteer opportunity for them. And it really adds to the maintenance of the park. You know, we do really well, you know, bringing in volunteers, but we always need additional help. There's a small group of people called the White Point Community Group. Mm-hmm. I'm the chair of that, and we meet monthly to talk about the maintenance of the preserve and that sort of thing. And we're always looking for new, you know, members of that group.
Yeah.
Like I said, we meet once a month. Currently, the second Tuesday of the month from 6 to 7:30 or so.
Okay.
So if any of your listeners are interested in that, maybe you can give them my information and they can contact me, because like I say, we always want to get more community input and participation.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have that information in our description notes so people can reach out too.
So in terms of getting involved with the other volunteer programs, you know, all the information is on our website, pvplc.org. And people can either find it in the calendar section or on the volunteer page.
Okay.
Sell them native plants, too.
Yeah. We on our website right now, we have lots of different native plants for sale. And you would just have to go pick them up at our offices over on Silver Spur in Rolling Hills Estates.
Okay.
And then pretty soon, we're hoping to bring back in-person plant sales over at White Point as well.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. And then for fundraising, so important.
So
the funding.
Important. Well, particularly now, we're in the midst of the final phase of what we call Go Wild for the Peninsula. That's the name of the campaign. And we're very close to our goal of raising $30 million, not just for White Point, but it was for both the purchase of a section of about 100 acres. I think it's 98 acres, actually, over by Portuguese Bend. It's called the Lower Filiorum. And we got a huge grant from the state of California, from the Wildlife Conservation Board. And Senator Ben Allen, who's the senator that represents our area, gave us a $5 million state grant as well. And we're also in the process of raising, you know, a lot of money. And I think we're going to be very close to that total of $30 million very soon. Part of that $30 million that we're hoping to raise, you know, $20 million of it or so was for the actual purchase of some land on the PV Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
But about $10 million of it is for the restoration, not just of that piece of land, but all across the peninsula. So we're really looking forward to being able to sort of like bring back the native plants and all of that at the end of this campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, you know, those are the bigger items. We also want to, you know, we're seeking donations on a smaller scale as well. And so every year we actually have a very specific event for White Point that we tie in with what Zoe was talking about, the Earth Day, you know, volunteering. But we're piggybacking on the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. So we will have an event this year where you can either sponsor by just, offering cash, mm-hmm. or, you can go online and join our online auction. We have a silent online auction. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like so much about San Pedro is that we've got all these restaurants and other businesses that have contributed gift certificates that we're using as, part of our online auction. So unfortunately, I think that you're going to be, airing this after the event, but for next year, people should be, thinking about, involving themselves in the online auction to support White Point. We hope to raise up to about $50,000 just for White Point this year through the online auction and through sponsorships.
That's wonderful. I'm happy. I'm happy that it's in good hands. I'm happy that it's a space that's being restored and it's being educated and used to its best ability and available for everyone. I think that's something that when we ask many of our guests, favorite things or good things about San Pedro, it's the ability to do so much here that's accessible, so that's incredible. Thank you to you both. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
The one thing I'll mention, because I think I, missed part of your question earlier about, getting involved with the Conservancy and that sort of thing. One of the things I like about San Pedro generally is it has a weird combination of a small town feeling, even in the midst of a big city, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And my own experience of getting involved with the Conservancy was because I was walking through White Point back in, 5 years ago in 2018, and this guy who has now become one of my best friends, named Bruce Biesman Simmons, walked up to me and said, "I've noticed you walking around here a lot. Who are you? And why are you here?" And those kinds of questions. And we struck up a conversation. That happens all the time at White Point. It's easy to connect to people through that place. And he was a former president of the board of directors, mm-hmm. and he said, you need to get more involved here, kind of mm-hmm. thing. And so that's how I got on the White Point community group at that time back in 2018, and then a year later I was elected to the board of directors, kind of thing. And I think that whole experience speaks to San Pedro generally in terms mm-hmm. of it's easy to feel connected to your community here, mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity, not just because it got me involved with the Conservancy, but it got me more involved with my entire community.
Yeah, I want to say that is something that is very unique to San Pedro. Is that that's something that is genuine and unique to here, and I very much appreciate that too. That brought me up to a question that I had, actually. Do you, and I'll let you think about it, but do you have a favorite memory that stands out of you at White Point?
I don't know if it's one distinct memory, but one of the things that always stands out in my mind is when we have kids come on a field trip. The excitement that they get when they, step off the bus and they see, all these plants, or they see a red-tailed hawk circling above, or they get really excited about, a California ground squirrel or a rabbit running around. Like, things that I see, pretty much on a daily basis that unfortunately don't excite me so much anymore. But when I see them, being really excited about it because it's such a novel thing for them, it really, it makes me get excited about it again and makes me, just kind of appreciate the space, and how lucky we are to have that.
I could mention a couple things. One, it's such a great place to walk our dog, and all of our dogs that we've had over the years. And that's one of the connecting things with other people, because they have dogs as well, and everybody, can bond over mm-hmm. the dogs. And I think of so many people that I've known there that we've been able to forge that connection through our pets, and that's just been a wonderful thing. But a more specific event that sort of relates to what Zoe was just saying, it's just recently I was at White Point at around noon or so because I was meeting a person who was interested in coming on to the development committee. And so I was sort of interviewing her about her background and, you know, seeing if it would be a good fit and that kind of thing. And we were sitting outside the Nature Center talking, and there was a group of kids, and they were probably about half a dozen with their mothers. And it wasn't the regular third grade crowd because they were much younger. They were in the 5 to 6 year old. It was like around first grade or kindergarten kind of thing. And they were all in a line, and our staff were holding up these puppets that they were, you know, say they were bird puppets, and they were, you know, making the, you know, what sound does the owl make? And the kids were going, whoo, whoo. And it was just delightful. It was just to see these kids, as you were saying, you know, it was just, you know, the connection that they were having to real life because they were in the preserve. And it was just a wonderful little experience. And that just happened about 3 weeks ago.
That's a wonderful thing to be able to experience that or witness it, you know. Now I'd like to switch gears into talking a little bit more about San Pedro. The question that Amanda always likes to ask everyone is, what are your concerns about San Pedro as a town, whatever concerns have may have come across? And then on the flip side, what excites you about San Pedro and the place that it's at right now and its future?
This isn't a big concern. But I heard that the Warner Grand is going to be shutting down, you know, for a period of time to refurbish, and that's wonderful because I feel like it's one of the best venues that we have, and actually I felt over the years a diminishment of that. I remember probably 20, maybe 25 years ago going to the Warner Grand to hear the Moscow Symphony Orchestra. Which was just absolutely spectacular kind of thing. And I also heard a Chinese orchestra come over from China and play there. And we don't seem to get those kinds of events anymore. And I'm not sure if it's not just economically feasible, but I really miss that. And I'm hoping that once they've refurbished the building, that maybe we could get things back. Because right now, we pretty much have to go to downtown Los Angeles if we want to go to theater and that sort of thing. But the Warner would be a wonderful venue for things like that if it was updated a little bit.
Yeah, that building and that space, like the history that's here in San Pedro, it's incredible. And I would love to have theater here.
I guess probably, and this is probably a concern for a lot of people, is a lot of the new development that's happening in town. You know, I'm not totally against, you know, new things and, you know, things that attract, you know, people from outside of San Pedro. I love that. That's fantastic. But I guess I'm kind of worried that, you know, some of the, you know, really like landmark places that have, you know, I grew up with, that, you know, other generations have grown up with are going to be replaced with, you know, other things, you know, like Portsicall is a really great example of all of that. That was really sad when it was all torn down.
Yeah. I'm sad to say I never got to know Portsicall, and the Fish Market, I think, is another one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And that is definitely one of the top things mentioned, is just sort of the development. And with any change, it's to see how will it impact, you know. What excites you about San Pedro?
I love the diversity of San Pedro. It's and I know this will sound weird. I also like the affordability of it. I mean, compared to other places in Los Angeles, it's much more affordable, and so you get a much more diverse population living in this area, and I think that adds to the quality of life. Some people would disagree with me about that, but I really, you know, believe in that. And like I said earlier, that small town feeling makes you feel much more connected to other people in your community than I think most places have.
For sure. Yes. Yeah.
Man, I'd say the food in San Pedro. Honestly, I feel like San Pedro has always been like, it's surprising that there's, like, you know, a lot of really good food places here. Yeah. And there's been some new ones coming in over the past, you know, decade or so. And I definitely think we're missing some, you know, good food opportunities here. But I've always, like, really appreciated the fact that you can find some really good food in San Pedro.
What are some new ones you've come across?
I'm currently addicted to, you know, Colossus Bakery and Chori Man. You know, because White Point is not all that far from there.
Yes.
So it's really easy for me to just, like, zip over to Alma, you know, go pick up my burrito and then go get a coffee too.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
It's like
also pretty good.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. So my favorite question to end the episode on is, describe your ideal day in San Pedro. What time do you wake up? Where do you get breakfast? It could include food. It could include your favorite activities, but walk us through your favorite day in San Pedro.
Okay. I mean, well, it's probably pretty obvious where mine starts. Go get a coffee at Colossus. Let's see. It would definitely include going down to the ocean somewhere. You know, either going to go visit the tide pools, maybe going to the aquarium, maybe going for a hike nearby. Some of my, like, favorite tide pooling spots are either in, you know, San Pedro or over, you know, somewhere else on the peninsula. Gosh, I feel like that would take up most of my day, honestly. Maybe go get some sushi over at Senfuku. Loved that place growing up. Gosh, I can't even think of what else I would I would do on my perfect day in San Pedro.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. What about you?
So if we were to go out, we'd probably go to, you know, for breakfast to someplace like Pacific Diner or, you know, someplace like that.
Yeah.
One of the very first things that we do almost every day is to take a walk at White Point. Mm-hmm. We get our dog and throw her in the car and head over to White Point and spend a half hour just, you know, walking the trails there. And, you know, depending if I have the duty, because I didn't mention that as part of the White Point Community Group, we actually lock the park gate every night. So, you know, you volunteer for a week at a time to be over there when Zoe and other staff aren't working to lock the gate on the weekends and that sort of thing. It's like we have volunteers who go by at 5 or 6 o'clock at around sunset. So we go for a second walk at White Point. We try to time it around sunset so we can watch the sun go down and walk around, and then we'll lock the gate on our way out so that we can make sure that it's secure.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty common experience for me, and we were really lucky to have that.
Yeah. So you mentioned Pacific Diner. Are there any other favorite places you like to go?
Well, there are too many to mention, Jess. I should have also mentioned the Lighthouse Cafe, because that's one of the places where we have brunch. But I mentioned earlier Compagnon, La Boca Feliz, the refurbished, you know, Sebastian's, the Whale and Ale, Raffaello's, all these places we're constantly patronizing. And they support us. You know, they give us their gift certificates for the White Point Nature Preserve auction kind of thing. So we're extremely grateful to them. And I there's too many places, you know, too numerous to mention.
We get
great support from the community.
Yeah, definitely. I think Pedro has that embedded in its DNA, is that support, community support. Yeah. For sure. Where can people find you guys?
So, I mean, I feel like if you're looking for all of our information, our website is a really great resource. It's pvplc.org. We have Instagram, we have Facebook. Our Instagram handle is @pvplc. And, you know, for Facebook, you can just search Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy and you'll find us. You know, we oftentimes post the events that we're going to be having soon, or, you know, we try to post some fun educational things about what's been seen in the preserves lately.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. I can give you my email address as well. It's Dave Pilon, all one word, DAVEPILON @cox.net. Okay. If anybody's heard anything on this podcast that they want to contact me about, that's how to get in touch with me.
Sounds good. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad. It's painless.
All for our episode, follow us for more on Instagram at HelloSPPodcast.
Huge thanks to Rock Ashfield at Palm Realty Boutique for providing us such a gorgeous recording space.
And thank you to all of our amazing Patreon supporters.
Leave us a review and share this episode with your friends, neighbors, and coworkers.
See you next week.